Thank you very much, Sabrina, for setting this symposium together. So, what I'm going to talk about today is the idea of how to use some sparse ad hoc sample, how to map soils properties of the area, over an area. So this is a work collaboration between the UW Madison and Chinese Academy of Sciences. So I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors on mostly from the Chinese Academy of Sciences. First of all, I'd like to introduce the opportunity and also the challenge that present us this digital world, the time that we're actually collecting a lot more samples than we realize. So I'll get to that ad hoc sample a little bit. Then look at the methodology, which is called sample-based inference, and people look at this, say, laugh at the mistake. We always use sample to make inference, but this one is a little different than the one we were talking about in the past in statistical and geostatistical techniques, a little bit different from that. Then look at a case study in topsoil organic matter content in an area, see how that particular method work. Okay, then show some result and draw some sort of a conclusion, mostly some sort of speculations that what we can go from this point on. So let's look at the opportunity. So I well know that the spatially enabled devices, such as portable devices, like iPhones, now become very available to everybody, that also can provide location that you are actually at. And this, that my futuristic thought is that this kind of device eventually can be used in the field for soil scientists to take a soil sample. Not only that, on a regular, well-designed sampling strategy, maybe on the way to some place, they saw some strange soil, they dig a pit, measure something, and record it in the iPod, and send off to some station. That's possible. That kind of sample might be collected. So this kind of, but those samples, in the past, people dig a pit, and look at it, no information recorded. Now with this kind of device, they could record it, on a job or off job, because of interest. And one problem with that kind of sample is that the spatial distribution of these samples are often very ad hoc. They don't really conform to any particular sampling design we normally develop, required for soil mapping. That's kind of, this might be an issue in it. The other one, we're going back to the legacy data that we being alluded to by many speakers at the beginning, that legacy data collected for other purposes over the area. For example, soil survey for prior paydown description. They're not designed for soil mapping, but they are designed to get the soil information. So that's information also that could be available to us. But often those data samples are very sparse. And so this is an example that with your soil survey, two soil surveys in China conducted in the 80s, that was actually you got samples scattered over the place. Those are samples, if you look at it, they're not really forming to any sampling design. So, okay, how you use that, but can we use the traditional techniques? So let's look at traditional techniques and how we do this mapping in a way. Well, you have a study area over here, and you want to produce some sort of soil map, some sort of property. The basic way we do it, we take sample. Go to your area, dig some pits, and then sample the area. So then we use some sort of interpolation techniques, fancy one or ugly one or easy one, whatever that you use to make interpolation, produce that data, produce the final output. And one, say, what's wrong with, can we use that? Well, the issue here is that there's a requirement for those data, that methodology. The basic requirement is very simple, that the sample has to be representative for the area. Representative means that it captured the global the pattern in that area, so that you can use a sample. So how normally we achieve that kind of stuff? Well, typically with two kind of a basic approach, a random or regular, where you do that in spatially sampling or in parameter space, like Alex's Happy Cube, Latin Cube sampling, also be in the domain sampling. And also some stratified sampling kind of stuff. But the basic idea, you're going to have randomized the sampling strategy or you regularize the sampling strategy so that the ideas hope to capture that global representativeness. That's what they're trying to do. So, but at this point, I would clearly see that the sample we have, collective ad hoc fashion, the old legacy sample, they do not really conform to this kind of requirement. So then certainly use the traditional techniques for mapping those things, you have a problem. And the The problem, the real issue is that you don't know what the problem, where the problem is, because you treat the sample set you have as a well-designed a set of sample, but in fact they're not. In addition to that, even though you have a well-designed sampling strategy, then you go out to the field to sample, a certain area just cannot be possible to go for number of reasons. One example I had was when I was doing a master's in Canada, I was going to do a soil sample in a farm, and neighbors say, you cannot go in there. I say, why? Well, you want to live, don't you? I say, yes. If you go there, you get shot. So whatever, your design might be very well set up, but in fact, your sampling, actual sampling may not follow your plan. So as a result of the good representation you hope to capture, that is not there in the data set. So the question here is, how do you map soil using the ad hoc sample? And that's not critical. The critical one is to how to assess the uncertainty associated with using this sample to make a map. So here's really what we're trying to hope provide some sort of ideas on it. The assumption is very simple, which is soils relate to the other easily observable environment, which in this case we can do that in GIS environment. So clearly we stated by two models, the soil landscape model and the Scopan model we heard earlier. And the other assumption that's more similar to the environment condition at the two sites, the more similar soil property, that generally can hold. And now if we can just characterize the environment to very, very accurately, then this probably holds pretty well. So then look at how we're going to do that. So, well, let's look at a sample. May not be representative for the global area, for the entire area, but it's representative to some region that is in its reside. So this sample, if you construct a feature space, say your parent material, elevation, precipitation, slope of gradient, things like that, you can construct this n-dimensional space. But that particular sample located at the n-dimensional space in the feature space, but is representative to some neighbor around this area. So next, say if we can use that sample that way, I might be able to predict soil property, which have a set of environment conditions, put the soil sample over here in this feature space. And in this case, we think these two points are reasonably similar. We can use a sample to predict it. So that's what we're trying to do. So let's say you have a sample K, that have a set of environment condition, which is this particular K is associated to soil property value. Now you have another unknown location with unknown value, which is Vij. But you do know the environment conditions that can be observed in characterized using GIS techniques. So there's a way you can measure the similarity between these two, the environment condition. We earlier said that the similar the environment condition, the similar soil property. So if you can measure that similarity, then we'll be able to make a prediction based on what we observed at sample site and what the value of there. Okay, that sounds pretty straightforward, simple. But the question, how you measure uncertainty? Well, we use the level of dissimilarity as a way to assess the uncertainty involved in making such kind of prediction. Basically, we use a dissimilarity between these two points to measure how much uncertainty is involved if we're using this particular point to predict the soil property value there. Now, that would be the way to do it. Now, one example is that if you're trying to use a sample to predict a location which is not similar to the sample location, then you involve more uncertainty than the ones close to it, right? That's the basic idea. So here's the methodology. I'm going to run through very quickly because we are about to have lunch. So the first one is characterize the environment condition. So we select a set of variables. So then we can use a GIS and remote sensing techniques to characterize those covariates at each of the grid cells. So as a result, for every single grid cell, you have a set of environment conditions, right? The second step is to process the ad hoc sample to reduce the redundancy in the sample set. Because you may have similar location be represented by more than one sample. In this case, you over-represented it. So we need to reduce that kind of stuff. So I'm not going to get into the detail about how you do that kind of stuff. There's a clustering algorithm allow us to throw out some of the samples that which are too simple, similar to each other. And certainly the techniques that say how you decide similar in what level, so on and so forth. But I'm not getting into details that. details of that. Third one is to compute the similarity between each ad hoc sample and unsampled location. And we're using this particular function. So this similarity evaluated in two functions. One function is the E function, which basically on each covariate at each environment variable, that is elevation, how you evaluate similarity elevation, and how do you evaluate similarity in your gradient. And once you've done that, the second stage would do a case level, sample level. The sample level, say, integrate all the similarity from individual variables and summarize it into, say, how this particular sample location is similar to a given sample that were known. So that's what we do. Eventually, you get this kind of a thing. For each location, you get a similarity vector. For each of the location, you have, say, this is a similarity to sample 1, similarity to sample 2, similarity to sample n. So you have 10 samples, and you have that kind of stuff to do. All right, fourth step, we're going to be estimating prediction uncertainty and soil property value. We go uncertainty first because we use this particular simple equation to do it. We're basically deviation from the complete, from perfectly be similar to it, okay? We use the maximum here. The basic idea is say, if a sample location is not similar to any of those samples we have, in this case, using any of the samples in the set to predict the soil property value at that location would involve a large amount of uncertainty. That's this equation basically is saying. So then we predict the soil property. So then for each location, we have uncertainty, and we set a value there, say, if the uncertainty below a certain value, then we allow you to make a prediction. Now, that's such order you can change yourself. That depend on quality of the requirement of the output. Okay, so for location which uncertainty is acceptable, then you use this equation to produce the property value. Now, so certainly for location on which uncertainty is not acceptable, it's too high uncertainty, so in this case we assign no data. Certainly, the threshold will depend on will really control the quality credibility of your inference that basically produce it. So people say, well, your map has no data. That's not very helpful. It's actually quite helpful for using ad hoc data because some of the area just cannot be predicted, should not provide value at all because you're basically misleading. For example, I have a point in a valley bottom. How could I use that to predict the soil property in the valley ridge top? That's unreasonable to do that. So those areas should mask out. In this case, people say you got to sample more. Okay. So this is the basic layout of the strategy. So determining the environment condition and computing the actual similarity, then make a prediction. So we did a case study in China in the Yilu River in Xinjiang autonomous region. We tried the soil organic matter content of top layer. We used a 1 kilometer grid size because the area is huge, 55,000 square kilometers. So it's pretty dry and we use about 70 some cases for the entire area, which are considered to be ad hoc sample. And then we have some validation points and show you may not be able to see 20, but then now we get into 32. So we kind of have some sample there. So we use the set of environment variable climate with a precipitation, temperature, and relative humidity. We derive a lot of the climate information because at a large area that you do see climate start to control the variation. And then pair material, and then you have a set of a topography. We also use a different resolution here, 1 kilometer and for the climate and pair material, which is at a macro scale, that kind of control. And a minor, macro scale, you're using a similar pixel size a little smaller, which is around 80, which is resampled from the SRTM, 90-meter SRTM. So that's what you have. So what I'm going to show is the result quickly. First of all, the uncertainty. This basically the sample set we have, given the distribution sample set, that's what you get as a certainty. The red area is very uncertain. As you saw earlier, the most of the sample are in the valley region, so the ridge tops are certain area with high uncertainty. Normally, you don't want to make prediction. The area with a blue color was high uncertainty. So And this is the map. And this is the result organic content. So we are showing the distribution where area can be mapped, and the area not mapped is grayscale level. So how good that is that we use a 32 some independent points. We have run a transact on it, and all some of the points scattered around an area did assessment. So the RMS even prediction. For prediction is 1.8. So standard deviation of sample 3.1. You know, it means that if you use the mean to estimate every location, you call it, your RMSE is 3.3 actually. And then for your 1 point, using this particular method, 1.8. So it's certainly better than the average condition. So we haven't done any other comparison yet, but we are currently working on it. But more important is the one actually looking at it, say, how would you use the uncertainty information? Would the uncertainty information will be any useful to make an assessment of the quality of the prediction? Well, we did this one. We used a plot, this scatter plot. So this side is uncertainty value at every single the location we sampled, and this is the residual from the prediction and versus the prediction observation. It's interesting. You see that trend over there with the increase of uncertainty value of the location, and the residual increases here. So that means that the uncertainty measure that we develop have some indicative power to show that the prediction at particular site. Now, we're not talking about the entire map. We're talking about every single location the prediction is made. So that case would be useful. So I'm taking that one step further, say, now if this is the case, now we know the uncertainty for every single location now. If we want to reduce the uncertainty, which means improve the quality of the prediction, can we use that uncertainty as a guide to help us to sample where to sample? How many samples should we collect? So this is something we are currently working on. This is a little diagram to show you. I'm going to move closer to this screen because I want to see. You see, this is the overall uncertainty in the map. Okay? We design a strategy based on reduction, maximum reduction uncertainty, organized so the sample that we should be sampled. The interesting part is not the whole part of the diagram. The interesting part is the first part, this part. You look at the reduction uncertainty dramatically quickly at the first few samples. Look at that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. If you want 7 samples, you can get the area dramatically reduced in this uncertainty. If my early assumption told, let's say, the uncertainty is a good indicator of quality, then we can dramatically increase the quality of that particular map. So we don't have to sample a lot, we sample few points. So that's the idea, that's probably something worth exploring. So instead of, I am getting myself in trouble by looking at Murray sitting there and say, he's a statistician, say, okay, you gotta have a statistical sample strategy. But this is a statistical sample strategy. As you go and say, did you use this one as guidance to help you direct yourself? Murray, I made a joke with you, so don't worry about it. With that, I'll thank you for your attention. And the funding, the conclusion here is that actually we say the proposed method, use similarity as a way to do that, as actually helpful in using the limited ad hoc sample for mapping soil over space. The other one, the space uncertainty seems to be a good surrogate as a quality. So the spatial variation uncertainty is actually might be used to indicate the spatial variation of quality, which means allow us to say what area meets our need, what areas not. So we will sample, put more samples there. So the research is funded by funding from the Chinese Natural Science Foundation and also the Wallace Associate Award and the Hamel Fellow from the Wisconsin Madison. Thank you very much.
There are
potentially several ways to do it. We currently using for climate value, we're using the so-called the Gower distance.
as a way to do it. And then for some train variable, we're using some cheap ones, basically using the cheap ones, basically take the data from the variational data and use a standard deviation as a way to produce a probability density function. So that's adapted to the local data, that would be. But we haven't assessed how, if that kind of approach, how different from the others. So far, what we did do is looking at some of the threshold for the uncertainty threshold, and also particularly when you do climate, you want separate climate from the train variables, because climate control a much larger spatial scale. So you want to say once the climate meet basic climate requirement, then you go down to the elevation or some local predictor. So it comes to strategy. We kind of set this climate cutoff. We see some impact. There's impact, but not huge amount of impact. So as we know now. Yes.
What you're doing sounds very similar to nearest neighbor prediction. More weighted averaging with a threshold. Have you explored nearest neighbor prediction?
It is actually another form of nearest neighbor in a parameter space. But the neighbor is not used as Euclidean in the distance. We're using some weighting function to transform. So that weighting function supposedly is hopefully we're going to be able to add some panagenesis into it. But at this point right now, we're just using a simple statistical. The idea here is trying to hopefully to make it simple. So that the whole idea behind this is that anybody can say, you have sample set, we can make a map for you. And then you can also make assessment, the quality of it. And then you say you want to improve it, you're going to go ahead and go sample that kind of stuff. So this is trying to get those the tedious mathematical primitives, equations away from people. So this is the kind of approach we take.
One of your predictors was parent material?
With a parent material, that could serve as a Boolean variable, cutting up, yeah.
Okay, and it came from a 1 to a million geological map of some sort, if I recall. A single value, I think is the way it was presented, is it?
Yeah, right now we're just basically cut into the biggest uniform area. That could contribute error. That are only available to us right now. But we recently just add another version to it, which I didn't include because we're using the geomorphological process into it by the genesis of the landform into it as a surrogate to age. So that actually improved the quality quite significantly. So that will be something we will. But that data only available that region, so not for the entire time. Yeah.
Do you also consider categorical environmental?
Yes, you can.
Do you assess the similarity?
That they are using so-called a hit or miss, so Boolean 1-0. Okay, that's just treat the same as the geology map. Also, I want to make a small announcement that the new version of Solemn Solutions, which is currently online, but I will be updating this manual on this plane back because it's finishing more other stuff. Be deployed and you can download. It has that this particular function. All the latest development we'll be doing with that. So you are welcome to download that. Our function, those all what I described here is there. You can plug your own data and play around with it. So.